Welcome back. You're listening to the Healthy Aging Show, and we're going to talk about men, Dawn.
Real men, Dennis.
Dr. Timmerman wants to give men an equal voice in this discussion.
Well, she's very fair, Dennis.
Okay.
Well,
I just thought, Dennis, because you're such a good interviewer, I should at least give men credit for what they deserve. But we are finding that more men are caregivers. And as you mentioned in this particular study that I quoted, there were more men, 60% of the caregivers.
Surprisingly high.
Now, this is a company that has predominantly male workforce of blue collar and white collar. So that is skewed. But we do find maybe 35 to 40% of caregivers now are men. And we did one called Sons at Work a while ago. And we found that men are as likely, we looked at data from three Fortune 500 companies, men are as likely to be primary caregivers as women. And that's pretty significant because often men are in higher positions. Not always now, because women are certainly catching up, but they have their stress as well, and it's not recognized as much as it could be, again, as other issues are. So I think that's a hidden population, because we think women are reluctant to come forward. Well, a lot of men aren't if they're not in positions, higher positions, to come forward and say, I'm taking care of mom and dad. And that's changing.
Well, you know, the economy, and getting back to what we were talking about, stress factors of technology, stress factors of just plain employment, and now the economy making people much more anxious about their continuation of employment, to inject parental care or elder care as a factor in why you can't be at work is got to be very psychologically threatening, if not real world threatening, to someone, because they may be fearful that they're going to lose their job to someone else.
It is funny. Someone pointed out to me, you always see pictures of families, your children on desks, but you never see pictures of mom and dad on a desk.
You're right.
Absolutely.
And, that's probably there are reasons for that. But I thought that was sort of a knowing comment in a way.
It was a knowing comment for me, actually, when interviewing for a position and walking through, this was a sales position years ago, and seeing the family pictures on desks, which told me the atmosphere and the receptiveness of the environment, which was part of the reason why I would accept a position from that company.
Can I just say something, though, that is, in favor of the employer, because I don't want to sound like we're bashing them.
Oh, no.
Many times employers offer these programs, and as we talked about that a bit earlier, but employees don't either know that they exist, or they don't think of their employer as a source of information or help, and so they never contact these services. So there was one study that showed that 20% of medium and large companies offered some kind of services, but the utilization was only 2%. And so then it becomes a chicken and egg situation, because the employer says, well, I'm trying my best to meet this need, but obviously, that isn't as big of a need as I thought, or, well, we'll do it anyway, but, it's not something that employees really want. So how do you get your employees to think of the employer as a source of help? Because in many ways, employers are more open to helping. It's just that they don't see the need.
It's communicating with the employees as to what's out there.
Exactly.
Years ago, when we first started the Comfort Keepers office here in Lower Fairfield County, there wasn't a lot of material available on employer relationships to caregiving services. And we crafted a piece that we called Caring for Your Employee's Grandmother May Be Costing You More Than You Think. And that is a reality. And it becomes more telling, I think, with a smaller company, too, because they don't have the luxury of depth of staff. And when someone is out in a small office, it's a major percentage of your office, it's a major percentage of workload, and you don't have someone that can just pick up and go over to that desk and fill in.
And you may have other coworkers who are very stretched as it is because of the example of this economic situation that we have right now. Now, looking back towards the employer is going to great extents to keep their employees. When you think about an economic turn that we've had, the very best is still being employed by those employers, although they are quite stretched. So they are trying their hardest to maintain those employees because they're very key.
That's true. If you're looking for
there are recruiting costs involved in getting new employees.
Oh, sure.
And lost knowledge if somebody leaves the workforce.
Well, if you're looking for the best of employees, they're working for somebody else.
The small business, I wanted to mention that because it's true the bigger companies have access to vendors who do provide these employee assistance programs, and then it's seamless to the employee. So an employee can go on a website or make phone calls, but some of the smaller employers really can't afford to do that. But there's so many rich community resources, certainly here in this area. And the partnership idea is really a good one for a small employer, because there are area agencies on aging. There is one for this Fairfield County area that has a hotline for caregivers. There is a government program called the National Family Caregiver Support Act, which puts some money in to have caregivers be able to phone into this area agency on aging. And there's one all over the country. The whole country is covered by these groups, and get some information. So that's possible. And you've got senior centers here. You've got adult day service centers here. Other services that could really be valuable to an employer. And I think the employer has a problem because they've got all these different components and don't know where to go. So sometimes we recommend that the community agencies sort of get together and go in a united front to the employer and say, here are the services. We could do a brown bag lunch, mm-hmm. you know, and just talk about what is available in a community for
and
you.
Thinking out loud, too, the benefits such as the telecommuting, the flex times, those can make a huge difference. That's where the technology becomes a positive as opposed to a stressful component.
The other things that just came to mind, 211 is mm-hmm. a phone access for a directory of lots of services, including caregiving, as well as, and it just struck me that CBIA, Connecticut Business and Industry, I believe has some offshoots where they have support services available to member companies. So, and a lot of those companies are small companies.
Yeah, I mean, here in Connecticut, it's the Southwestern Connecticut Area Agency on Aging.
Right.
And
SWACA.
Unfortunately, the name isn't always something you'd think of if you're a caregiver. So it's hard to find these places. But even a senior center could put you in touch with someone who could really connect the dots. I mean, I think the harder part, though, is navigating this is really difficult, because there are just so many components. And when you get started as a caregiver and you're working, where do you begin? Does mom need assisted living? What's home care? Are there government programs that she would be eligible for? Could she stay at home? Should I get a private pay person? Should I quit my job? I mean, all these things come up, and it's really difficult to figure out. There's no one-stop shopping very well in getting advice.
Well, we're trying to help resolve that. Your website has all of the reports that you generate. This is not something that is only available to large corporations. Anyone that can go online and read the MetLife Mature Markets Institute reports, and they're very interesting. There's a lot of numbers in them, but there's a lot of text that is very informative about the process and the options that are available. Dr. Timmerman gave me a shortcut, which is maturemarketinstitute.com. We'll get you in and close to or on top of some of these reports, and once you're in there, you can navigate around. The other place that you can go is the healthyagingshow.com. We are accumulating hundreds of resources and articles and links, including the Mature Markets links, to give you a place to navigate to. So
that's great. And we do have guides called Since You Care Guides. You'll see it on the website, you know, how to choose an assisted living facility, how to choose an independent caregiver, some issues around advocating for your family member, and other organizations like the Alzheimer's Association is a good resource if your loved one has dementia. There's so much wealth of information out there. I think that sometimes gets to be a problem. And, you know, I always think if you have the resources, hiring a geriatric care manager might be the way to go, because that occupation is like a wedding planner almost. They can, instead of just throwing information at you, they can guide you through the process, visit your family member, talk to you, and then make some recommendations. So that's an occupation that I think will be growing as the years go on.
I think that and patient-client advocacy mm-hmm. from a medical standpoint, because so many people don't know how to navigate the medical side.
Do you foresee any particular trends for employers? Because this boom is such a large population of employee for them. What do you think might be happening? Do you have a crystal ball on this?
I know. Well, it's fun to speculate. Obviously, this issue is coming to the forefront to such a great degree now. So those of us who've been working for a number of years in this area feel that the time is right for this to come together. The study that you were focusing on earlier, bringing together wellness services with elder care services, I think would be a trend for employers, because we think that this study will get employers to view this whole elder care issue in a different way and say, oh yeah, our caregivers are a little bit sicker, they're in need of some wellness services, and how can we encourage them to take place? So that might make that happen to a greater degree. I think the other thing is that flex time has become really a norm now, because before you'd have to take a whole day off, but you really only needed to take mom to the doctor for 2 hours. So now employers are realizing that if they give their employees 2 hours off, the employee can make that up at another time. And then, as you said, telecommuting, if the home care aide doesn't show up for some reason, to be able to telecommute. And I think the employer has to do a little give and take on that too. It might not work for every single job, but mostly, as we've been talking, technology allows us to work at home in a way that we were never able to before. So caregiver who's trusted by the employer will give back services and loyalty in a way that would make a huge difference, I think. And it's sort of a two-way street.
I think that really secures a relationship. I know years ago, one of my dad's benefits was eye surgeon, a list of eye surgeons actually for me. And that really cemented that relationship, that very much, he was very dedicated to the company because of their dedication to him in a time of need.
I know things like having flu shots on site make it really easy because, you know, a lot of times you have to rush home. You don't, and as we were talking earlier, you don't take time for yourself to do basic healthcare screenings or prevention. And bringing some of these things to the workplace takes 10 minutes to get a flu shot in the workplace, but you would have to take some time off to do it on your own. So these are simple things that don't cost employers any money.
That's what I keep on looking to, is what keeps the employer from dipping their toe in the water of these resources. Is, you know, it might be the fear that it's going to cost them. And so many of these services are just knowing what they are and making that knowledge available to the employee. One thing that we haven't seen a whole lot of recently, but seemed to be popular a while back, with the health fairs in companies, would be an assemblage of providers of a whole multitude of services, and those providers would be happy to even pay to be present at these venues. And the employees were hungry for information in those that we've attended in the past.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I know from, you know, looking at the HR departments, the human resource departments, many times now there are not as many people on staff as there used to be. In a large company, some of these employee assistance programs are vendored, as I mentioned. So you have a large company that provides this as a seamless service. So I wonder if that could be one of the reasons, or maybe it is a lot to try to set something up like this because somebody has to coordinate it.
So find an out-of-work party planner and give them a job.
or maybe someone from the community could organize it so it makes it easy for a company, because I have heard that employers say, you know, I get a visit from adult day center, I get a visit from a, you know, home health agency, they want to do brown bag lunches, and there are just so many people, you know, different components, different companies, small companies coming in. It would be really terrific if it were coordinated in a way where you could have one stop shopping where the agencies get together and come in and it's all there for you, all laid out.
Oh, now you're getting Dawn all excited now. She's got a new project now.
There we go. But now, one of the things too, I noticed that if you are seeing this delay with families, this means the grandchild, quote unquote, is going to need a lot of the information you have at this website before they even imagine they would need to know. I was researching through, it was very comforting to see some of the statistics in the sense that you'll recognize other people are experiencing the same stress that you have been experiencing.
Yeah, I think the support group idea at lunchtime, you could do it at lunchtime in an employer group. And, you know, people have to be brave enough to come forward, but most employers make these group situations available. That would be really helpful because then you know you're not alone. I think that's really an important point.
Well, again, I think a lot of the events that I've attended, there's been a cross-section of providers of services that weren't just of the elderly. Right. They were health and wellness. And everything we're talking about is exactly in that realm.
It is, you know, a one-way street.
The thing that I wanted to mention, too, in this study, we had a number of younger caregivers, if you remember.
I did.
You read this. And they're the ones who seem to be more stressed. And I think it is because they have young children at home. And they seem to have worse health conditions in some areas than some of the older ones. It seemed to be women over 50 and some of the younger ones. And then in some cases, men were the culprit. culprits or the, what should I say, the recipients of bad health. But it's quite interesting to think about the age groups who are caregivers, and I think your point is well taken.
Well, now that we've embarked on health reform, insurance reform or health reform, whatever you want to call it, part of what has been brought to the forefront is prevention.
Yeah, and good point. I think also we're trying to get caregiving on the agenda of health reform. The National Alliance for Caregiving is the group that we do a number of our studies with, which is a consortium of a number of organizations that are involved in caregiving and government agencies. And so when they're in Washington, I've been chairman of the board of that group, and they work really hard to say, don't forget the caregiver. Caregiver health is a big part of health care reform.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Often forgotten, mm-hmm. but we've got people in Washington who are trying to get it to the forefront, and you have some champions in Congress who have been trying to get caregiver tax credits for years and years. Probably not the right environment for that, but at least integrating it into health reform would be important.
Well, it's also the proactive aspect of wellness, where this legislation is going to force some people to take better care of themselves in order to be able to access some of the services that are being proposed.
Yeah. And actually, some of the skills that you use caregiving, certainly you're not losing skills while you're participating in caregiving. You're actually improving your skills in a lot of ways.
I know one of the things we had mentioned when we looked at, you know, what to talk about today was, what do you do if caregivers are non-compliant in the workplace?
Right.
And, you know, you don't want to really punish them.
We make them relax.
And you also don't want to discriminate against them and say, aha, you're a caregiver. I think that would be a fear. You might not want to be singled out. But it's the incentives, I think, that, you know, we feel would work. T-shirts or days off or ability to wear jeans to work or whatever it is to everyone, because it is really difficult to single out your caregivers unless they're willing to self-select. And that's a tricky part. But I wouldn't want to penalize them if they don't.
Right.
And that's always a fear when you begin to get into health behaviors that, you know, if you smoke, you're going to get less salary. That might not be a good thing to do.
Well, we're going to wrap up because I know that your time is tight. But one thing that I did notice was that in the study of the 17,000, about 2% accessed the services that were afforded by the company. And one of the questions that I had was, is there recourse where there are extensive services available to better the employee's life and their role as a caregiver and employee, and they don't partake of it? Does the company have recourse?
You know, I think in some ways the elder care services are not, in the scheme of problems that a company has in HR, it's probably not the most important piece. Maybe the wellness piece is, because that really affects their employees' health, and it also affects the bottom line, because
right.
it's going to cost them more money to provide the health
benefits.
It does
begin there.
What?
So I think that to have the, is it the carrot or the stick?
I know.
You know, I hate the idea of the stick. I'd rather have the carrot and try to incentivize people to, you know, to participate and make it easy for them.
You know, one thing that I always try to make it better. If we have a problem with an employee, rather than all of a sudden just cutting the relationship, what's the problem? Try to put ourselves in their shoes. And what are you laughing about? God, you're the only one that I don't consider for that solution.
I'm just the major problem.
But if someone is worth hiring, someone was a good employee up to a point where caregiving became an issue, then is that a reason to terminate the relationship? No, it's a reason to make it stronger by helping them through this issue and make accommodations, because they're a contributor to your business. And frankly, you don't hire somebody if you don't need them, and you don't keep somebody if they're not a producer.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, because if you ask employers, and MetLife provides benefits to very large, I think 87 of the Fortune 100 companies, and you ask an employer why they're doing it, it really is that as well. They've hired someone, they're making a commitment to have work-life balance. We hear so much about that. Younger people are really demanding more work-life balance. And so I think you have to give the employer credit for wanting to help the employee. And also, they've invested money in this person, training them, and they're obviously good enough or they would have been fired, particularly in this economy. So there, it isn't just the bottom line. And we thought when we were doing the studies on productivity, you know, when we have big figures like lost productivity can be anywhere from $17 to $33 billion a year because of absenteeism and all that. And then the healthcare costs $13 billion more. Those figures resonate, but it also is what these employees really need from their employer so they can do a better job and the employer can get all the attention that they wanted.
It's a balance. It's a balance, and both sides have to be able to come to the middle. We're going to wrap up. I want to thank you very much for being with us. We've been talking with Dr. Sandra Timmerman of MetLife Mature Markets Institute, and we'll be back on after this break, and we'll be talking about more really good stuff. We'll be right back.